Look, I suppose too, as again I'm reading the 2021 RAP impact report, there's some amazing data coming out. In fact, 2,799,000, or what am I saying? Yeah, there's in excess of 2,800 million worth of goods and services were procured in the last 12 months. That's a lot of money, eh? It's so there's a lot of good information available in this RAP report. As I said earlier, in excess of 60,000 people have taken up employment with the RAP organisations in the last 12 months. There's been an enormous amount of people that have participated in face-to-face cultural learning, 140,000, and 102,245 employees in RAP organisations have participated in cultural immersion program. This is the sort of thing that's really going to be important for the likes of Senator Pat Dodson and his efforts now to look at the Uluru Statement and how we can get a voice in Parliament. And we shouldn't be getting complacent with some of these figures, even though they're amazing figures, I think. There's a lot of work still to be done, and I think I've mentioned at a recent forum for reconciliation is something like this. If all the reconciliation or RAP organisations have a meaningful and realistic RAP that is around employment, we wouldn't have too many unemployed Aboriginal people. So I think there's some good things happening there, but I sense you're a little bit, you'd like to see things moving a bit faster. And how do you see things changing in your region in this regard?
My comment is, so there's two things that I'll respond to in that sort of comment and then answer the regional question. So first thing is our rights to speak our language, our rights to practice
yes.
our spirituality and culture. These are rights that are not being supported and not being enhanced. So when you're talking about cultural inclusion, recognising diversity, all those sort of things. The state government of Western Australia, with all its billions of dollars of profit, does not support Aboriginal languages in the community. Mm. So, you know, if people want to engage with First Nations and engage with the place in which they're living, everyone should be extended the right to learn the first language, the Australian language, instead of speaking the imported language, which is English.
Mm.
So that's just an example, you know, of these higher level things that need to be addressed. And now, coming into the social, the economic side of it, and this is what I'll be talking about at the Festival of Ideas in the keynote on Saturday at 11 a.m. There's the economic story. Is one where Europe expanded across the globe, created empires, and the empires were all aimed at extracting wealth and exploiting people and resources and channeling all of that wealth back into Europe. So it's no accident that today Europe is one of the wealthiest parts of the globe. And Australia, of course, is built on the legacy of that extraction and that exploitation. Western Australia is built on that. So the marginalisation and exclusion of Aboriginal people from economic opportunities, which we now celebrate through reconciliation action plans and all of that, the marginalisation and exclusion was a deliberate construction of the economic model that the empire was built on. And what we really need to be doing is tearing down the infrastructure that we as West Australians inherit from the empire and recast a lot of these relationships. So that's pretty much where, the economic model is extraction, exploitation, marginalisation. And then... bringing back the participation through, let's not forget that Rottnest Island as a prison was set up by Governor Hutt, I think it was in 1831 or thereabouts, as a training facility for Aboriginal people to make them useful for jobs in the colony.
Yep.
Employment and training program, aka Rottnest Island Prison for Aboriginal people. So, you know, there's those sort of narratives and those stories are untold, but it then exposes the inequitable relationships. And that's pretty much where we really need to go back to explore the wealth that's inherent or built in within the Aboriginal cultural and customary domain, and then try to negotiate how we position ourselves in relation to the world economy and the globe, the state and the national economy.
Very interesting conversation, and you know, your thoughts around language, I think, is so important. You have to have, as far as empowerment of First Nation people, a recognition of language and land, as you know, your work in the native title area must also include the recognition of around diversity and recognition of language. So I'm glad you raised that. And so from a regional point of view, you're a Ngalian person from the Wangatha mob in the Goldfields. So how do you see it playing out in your area, the whole spirit of reconciliation?
As we go down the pathway, and this is the thing. So there's some people, you know, don't like native title, but out in the desert regions, you know, in towns like Wiluna, Ngarnyadatta lands, and we're progressively moving into the Goldfields region. So unfortunately, the core Goldfields region has not had native title settlements or claims determined yet, which is really appalling situation given that it's like 30 years since the Mabo decision this year. But native title gives a foot in the door. So as people, because what it does, it actually recognises that relationship and those rights that we have in land that we've held since time immemorial. And all of a sudden, once you get that recognition, there's a dawning, you know, a peeling off of the mind that goes, wow, all of that 200 years worth of oppression, marginalisation, and all of that, we're still here, we're still standing, we're strong, and then you realise that as a property owner, it's our right to push back and against government, push back against developers, and start dictating the terms on which they engage with us on our country. So there's going to come a time in the Goldfields region when, you know, people around Kalgoorlie and Coolgardie and Menzies, Leonora, all these Laverton, all these people will go through a process first where they're going to go through, you know, a bit of turmoil. But at the other end, they'll settle down into this flow state where they're going to become empowered and be able to negotiate economic opportunities, governance structures, all those sort of things with the settler state. So, you know, I think to a certain extent, places like Ngadju and Esperance and Yilga and Jiwal and the Wiluna claims, they're doing that. It's still early days, but, you know, all the listeners out there, don't underestimate the power of what native title does to the spirit of the people.
No, interesting. Excuse me. Kato, look, thanks for being on the program. You're talking now at the Disruptive Festival, and we've got you down as being talking between 10:15 and 11:15, the State Library, a free event on the ground floor. So what are you going to be telling the listeners there? Much the same as what you're saying today? I mean, what is the title of your paper?
Oh, goodness, I can't remember what my title is now. But I mean, basically, the model is around bringing back that wealth that we hold. So recognising the wealth, and that's the platform. So wealth is, your people, your country, your culture, your social institutions, your natural resources, your infrastructure, all of those sort of things. And the model is for us as... There are two audiences that I'm talking to. One is Aboriginal people, and the other one is the broader, community of Western Australia. And our interests are pretty much aligned in that we do have, natural resources on our land. A lot of it's being extracted and taken away, and great wealth is accruing to, shareholders in corporations and stuff like that. But the reality is that the wealth that stays at the community level is essentially stuff that's trickled down. And there's this idea of trickle-down economics. And what I'm wanting to do in the disrupted sort of space is to say, hey, let's critique that, let's question that. And there have been, I don't know if you've been, your listeners have probably been following the national debate on energy market, for instance. Western Australia stands alone because I think it was Alan Carpenter's government forced the gas companies to set aside an allocation for Western Australia. Otherwise, they all jump up and down, kicking and screaming and saying, well, we're going to go overseas, you're going to lose investment. And when Carpenter called their bluff, they stayed, and we now stand alone from the rest of the country in that we have a security as a state of being able to get, access some of the gas that's being produced in our country. Yeah, so there's that sort of conversation. That's the sort of conversation I want to generate.
Good on you, Cato. Look, thanks for coming on the program. I'm going to give it a bit of more of a plug. You've given us a tease. You've given our listeners a tease as to what is going to occur at the State Library for the 8th Annual Disruptive Festival of Ideas. So this weekend from Saturday the 18th of June to Sunday the 19th. So thank you for being on the program, Cato. Much appreciated. I've got your phone number now, so you won't escape me in the future.
No worries.
Thanks, Cato. Thanks for being on the program, bud.
Just check that date, that the time, because I was told 11 o'clock. But,
okay, well, we'll check it. Yeah. We've got you. It's written, the notes here, it says 10:15 to 11:15.
Okay, better make sure I turn up at 10 o'clock then.
Yes, well, if you've got the time, that'll be great. So look forward to hearing from you. Will it be available on podcasts? Do you know?
I'm not sure, mate.
We'll check it out.
I think it will, yeah.
Okay. Once again, Cato, appreciate your time here on Mudich Mag on RTRFM. Thank you. Travel well.
Hello, mate. You're well.
Thank you. Cato Muir, what a discussion. If you want to hear more, he'll be speaking at the State Library's 8th Annual Disruptive Festival of Ideas this weekend. We're led to believe it's 10:15 to 11:15. Cato thinks it's 11 a.m., so need to check the web pages, the Disruptive Festival of Ideas. So Cato Muir, a Wongatha man from Leonora, who's been a strong advocate for Aboriginal people, not only locally, but he's chairman of the National Native Title area. So very distinguished in heritage and described as a fierce advocate for Indigenous Australian rights and land and protection of cultural heritage. So Cato Muir, a privilege to speak to him today and get some ideas of how he ticks. But interesting conversation. So you'd like to find out more, as I say, the 8th Annual Disruptive Festival. The time is right. We just checked the web, 10:15 to 11:15, the ground floor of the State Library of Western Australia. is RTRFM 92.1 Moorish Mag. Now, where does the time go to? We're going to go out now with an interview with Jodie Nunn, the CEO of Reconciliation West Australia, talking about the highlights of her visit to Sydney last week at the National Reconciliation Action Plans Conference, new members wanting to sign up, etc. So we're going to say goodbye. Shall we say goodbye, Charlene?
Yes, let's say bye.
Here's Jodie Nunn from Reconciliation West Australia, the CEO. Okay, so on the line we've got Jodie Nunn, CEO of Reconciliation in Western Australia. Good morning, Jodie. How are you?
Hi, Uncle Jim. How are you today?
I look very good. Exhausting last week, and I've explained to our listeners here on RTRFM and Moorish Mag, we had a big week last week, and you've had a big month around Reconciliation Week. And last week was extraordinary. It was a national rap conference, Jodie, and you were there. What did you think of it?
I thought it was an amazing week, actually. And to me, it was as much as a rap conference, which, of course, is supporting organisations on their reconciliation action plans. It was really, it was a much bigger picture around the future of reconciliation in this country. And I think we can all say since the federal election, it's pretty exciting times with the commitment to the Uluru Statement in full in the first term of our new federal government. So very exciting times. And as you know, Jim, we had the new minister, Linda Burney, and also the Reconciliation Special Envoy, Pat Dodson, appearing at the conference too. So that was incredibly inspiring to hear their words and their optimism for the future of reconciliation and the Uluru Statement in this country.
Jodie, look, love to talk to you about a whole range of things, but the main item for today is the 2021 RAP Impact Report, which I figure is quite new. It's the first time I've seen it, and it was tabled last week, and talks about, well, I guess the impact and the different areas it's made a big impact. And can we just talk about that and what you feel about the most important aspects of it? I mean, you know, just about in relationships, for example, there's 8,899 in formal partnerships. There's been 4,173 National Reconciliation Week events. There's just some amazing stuff in there. And I think around employment, I think a lot of our listeners would be really interested in knowing this, particularly Aboriginal listeners, because of there's a little bit of scepticism, I think, from a lot of our Aboriginal community about reconciliation, Jodie. And the report talks about 102,245 Aboriginal people are employed in RAP organisations. So it is making a significant impact, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Jim, I think with what you raise around the RAPs, yes, it's often raised with us as well as a reconciliation peak body in the state, and justifiably so, because not everyone's experiences have always been positive. But I dread to imagine the state of things without reconciliation action plans in Australia, because I think they have done a lot to rise the tide. What we talk about in this space is very much around authenticity, and we have that conversation with everyone who walks through our door that they should not start this journey unless they are absolutely authentic from the top of the organisation all the way through to do this work. And we learn a lot as we go. But as you say, the report the report is really quite profound, I think. I mean, it's been responded to by about 2,200 organisations now have RAPs. And I know that there's about 600 RAPs in the pipeline that Reconciliation Australia is working with. And these are organisations that are saying, this is important, this is a priority for us, this is where we're going to put our efforts moving forward. And our job is to make sure they do that, not in a tokenistic way, but in an authentic and engaging way, and that they learn from others. And there's so many people doing really good work now in this space that we don't have to start from a blank page and do 101 anymore. We can connect and enable people so that they can learn from others who have learnt the hard yards and can share their experiences. But I think some really exciting areas of the report, as you mentioned a couple, but most people would know that work in the RAP space or have had a touch point with it, that there's really three tiers to a RAP or three key areas of focus. One is relationships, the second is respect, and the third is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And Fred Chaney, who, as you know, is a bit of an elder in the reconciliation movement and a West Australian, was the original co-chair at Reconciliation Australia when the RAPs were brought into play. And he talks a lot about prior to the RAP structure, there used to be very much a mentality of, oh, there's a problem, white fellas go in and fix it, you know, with the white fella lens. And they charge in and come up with this wonderful solution that they thought would fix everything. And, of course, they didn't engage Aboriginal people. They didn't listen to Aboriginal voices and they didn't support self-determination. So what the RAP was designed to do was to slow organisations down and really build in that respect and relationships tier, which is what it's all about, to build that. And we heard last week that these things only move as fast as the speed of trust. And I thought that was a really powerful statement, that we have to do the, we have to do the work up front in order to be able to have outcomes that Aboriginal communities and people want. So a few things that really resonated for me is in relationships, nearly 4 million Australians now work or study in an organisation that's committed to the RAP program. I think that's incredible.
It is. Now, Jodie, I made a mistake here. I said there was 102,245 employees recruited, but it's in fact 102,245 employees who have participated in a cultural immersion program. In fact, what the RAP organisations over 2020 and 2021, there were 61,263 Aboriginal people recruited. So my bad there, I've fixed that. So can we just go on then and talk some more about your particular role? Because these are national figures. How does, do we get an idea of state figures?
We're waiting for the state figures to come through. We have requested them, so we will hopefully see those very shortly. But we know in Western Australia, of course, there's a big bulk of, for example, mining companies who do a lot of the heavy lifting in the RAP space. But what we're seeing is a lot of movement too, not only from those who have been in it for a long time, but lots of smaller organisations now, and a huge shift as well in the education space through the Narakanawali program, led by Leonie Cotton-Williams here at Reconciliation WA. An amazing program, and really getting into our early childhood settings and schools, so those next generation of kids, this is just a no-brainer for them. In fact, my big dream that, you know, in 20 to 30 years' time, we won't need a reconciliation movement because it'll just make sense, and it'll just get done. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
And in my view is too, is if every RAP organisation had a fairly sensitive or realistic RAP, we'd have very few unemployed Aboriginal people, Jodie.
Absolutely. I think so. And we did talk about the opportunity piece before that is led from, you know, respect, relationships, and then into opportunity. 2.8 billion worth of goods and services were procured from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses nationally. I mean, that is phenomenal. That's money going into families and homes, and that's the economic prosperity piece that we're really chasing after in the RAP model, both through employment and procurement from Aboriginal businesses. So whilst there is, you know, where we can always improve, can't we, as walking together and learning and listening from one another. But I've got to say, with the stats we're seeing in this report, it's pretty exciting to think that these kind of opportunities are front of mind for many organisations in the country. Mm.
Look, Jodie, I'm glad you mentioned the three sort of areas that is expected from a RAP. It's relationships, respect and opportunities. And that's sort of amazing. And I think I see so many organisations that are developing along those lines. But it is so good to see that around 61,263 Aboriginal people employed in the last 12 months, or the reporting period between 2020 and 2021. This is just amazing. And I think it'd be worth another yarn to you, Jodie, as CEO of Reconciliation West Australia, when you have relevant figures around Western Australia. So I'd love to have you back on Mudich Mag here. We're listening to Jodie Nunn, the CEO of Reconciliation Western Australia. What are the challenges for you in Western Australia then, do you think, Jodie?
I think that the next exciting, I wouldn't see it as a challenge, I'd see it as a great opportunity, is that, of course, we need to start preparing the state for the very exciting conversation that's going to happen around the acceptance and the referendum around the Uluru Statement from the Heart. But from at a local level, our big challenge over the next 12 months is that we need to move from being relatively metro-centric to regionally focused as well. And we started that journey. For people who tuned into the National Reconciliation Week virtual breakfast this year, they would have seen a fantastic regional panel, which included, of course, Kate O'Muir, who you've got on your program today, along with the man. We had voices from the Kimberley, from the Pilbara, from Great Southern and also out the goldfields from country. And we really kind of got the pointy end of those challenges that are happening in the regions, because we know that the regions all have their own needs, as well as supporting our Perth community, our Borloo community here, our reconciliation organisation, to make sure that we can build those services and capacities alongside others in the regions as well. Mm.
Jodie Nunn, CEO of Reconciliation West Australia, it's been great to have you on the program giving a report card on the National RAP Conference last week in Sydney, which I was there present. So really great to have you on the show, Jodie. Love to bring you back and have another yarn about the impact of reconciliation in Western Australia. Thank you for being on the program, Jodie.
Thank you so much, Uncle Jim. Have a great day, and thank you to your listeners.